Sudama visits Lord Krishna. Text number 35 and 36. But we'll just read 35 and we could get what's in the book.
Apina smaryate brahman. Vritam nivasatam garo.
Vritam nivasatam garo.
Guru darais goditanam. Indana nayane pachit. Apina smaryate brahman.
Apina smaryate brahman.
Vritam nivasatam garo.
Guru
Darais Koditanam.
Guru Darais Koditanam.
Indana Nayane Kvachit.
Indana Nayane Kvachit.
Apina Smaryate Brahman.
Apina Smaryate Brahman.
Uttam Nivasatam Garo.
Uttam Nivasatam Garo.
Guru Darais Koditanam. Indana nayane kvachit.
Apina smaryate brahman.
Apina smaryate brahman.
Vritam nivasatam garo.
Vritam nivasatam garo.
Nivasatam.
Who were living?
Garau. With our spiritual master.
Guru.
Of our guru.
Darai.
By the wife.
Choditanam.
Who was sent?
Indana.
Firewood. Anayani.
Forfetching.
Kvachit. Once. Translation in purple for the followers of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. This is the translation to both verses, 35 and 36. O Brahmana, do you remember what happened to us while we were living with our spiritual master? Once our guru's wife sent us to fetch firewood, and after we entered the vast forest, O twice born one, an unseasonal storm arose with fierce wind and rain and harsh thunder. Translation responsibly. O Brahmana, do you remember what happened to us while we were living with our spiritual master? Once our guru's wife sent us to fetch firewood. And after we entered the dark forest, O twice born one, an unseasonable storm arose with fierce wind and rain and harsh thunder. Purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that this storm arose during the winter and was therefore unseasonal. Next verse. Then, as the sun set, the forest was covered by darkness in every direction, and with all the flooding, we could not distinguish high land from low. Constantly besieged by the powerful wind and rain, we lost our way amidst the flowing waters, flooding waters. We simply held each other's hands, and in great distress, we wandered aimlessly about the forest. Purport. Sridhar Swami points out that the verb paribhavrima may be understood to be the prefix pari with either the verb bri or brahm. In the case of brahm, it indicates that Krishna and Sudama wandered all about, and in the case of bri, which means to carry, it indicates that as the two young boys wandered about, they continued to carry the firewood they had secured for their spiritual master. Text 39. Our guru, Sandipani Muni, understanding our predicament, set out after sunrise to search for us, his disciples, and found us in distress. Text number 40. Sandipani Muni said, O my children, you have suffered so much for my sake. The body is most dear to every living creature. But you are so dedicated to me that you completely disregarded your own comfort. Text number 41. This is indeed the duty of all true disciples, to repay the debt to their spiritual master by offering him, with pure hearts, their wealth and even their very lives. Purport. One engages the body to realize one's purposes. The body is also the basis of the material conception of I, while one's fortune is the basis of the conception of mine. Thus offering everything to the spiritual master, one realizes oneself to be an eternal servant of the Lord. The spiritual master does not exploit the disciple, but rather engages him fully in Krishna consciousness for the disciple's eternal benefit. Om Gyanata Minandasya Gnanjana Shalakaya Chakshu Unmitam Jena Tasmaya Shri Guru Venamaha Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Sri Advaita Garadhara, Sri Vasari Gaur Bhaktivinoda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So let's say, theoretically, we all know everything about the complete situation of existence. Are there any questions left? We all know everything. Are there any questions remaining?
No.
Yes, there is one question. And that question is, how can I serve you? For the enlightened soul, who understands who he is eternally, everything is in the correct perspective. One is properly situated in consciousness. But then in order to activate one's personhood, one needs service. That is the conclusion, actually, of Bhagavad Gita. When Arjuna had fully surrendered to Krishna after being instructed and had his mind fixed up, he then served Krishna according to Krishna's order. It happened that Krishna had already given his order right in the beginning. Just fight this battle So Arjuna picked up that order and then executed it. But if we are ignorant and we don't have contact with Krishna, and then we learn our eternal situation, then no questions remain except, how am I to be engaged in your devotional service, my dear Lord? So yesterday's verse was a very wonderful verse. I'll read it again. I, the soul of all beings, am not as satisfied by ritual worship, brahminical initiation, penances or self-discipline, as I am by faithful service rendered to one's spiritual master. That's Krishna speaking. Krishna, many times in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is not a dogmatic supreme personality of Godhead. He's very reasonable, actually. Many times Arjuna asks questions and Krishna says, well, this and that, and that is my opinion. As, you know, as if to pacify the, you know, the modern person who believes everybody's opinion is equal. So of course that is my opinion. It's up to you what you want to do with that, because you have free will. But that is my opinion. Now the intelligent person is very much interested in the opinion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because it is that opinion which defines reality. It's not our opinion that defines reality. That's why we get frustrated, actually, because our opinion or our will is out of harmony with the Supreme Will. And therefore, although we desire things to go in a certain way according to our will, it doesn't happen. Our opinion is not supreme. Krishna's opinion is supreme, and it defines reality. Therefore, the devotee is very much interested. What is Krishna's opinion? What is Krishna like? What does Krishna want from me? Understanding that, he knows what to do with his existence. The question that eternally besets the conditioned soul is what to do. Many people are in great despair, even suicidal, for lack of an answer to this question, what to do. Perhaps they've taken a step back from life and they've kind of thought, what is the point of everything? There's two types of people in Maya, basically. There's the person who just gets into it and forgets about deeper reflection. And then there's the person who steps back and goes, actually, what's the point? They generally become jnanis. Or in the absence of jnan, real knowledge, they become depressed. Because they can, looking at material nature, perceiving the faults in material nature, it's temporary, and not being inspired by the goal, which is actually no goal, of simply trying to attain temporary sense gratification for the material senses, they lack purpose, they lack motivation. They become into a state of inertia. And depression arises, because it's the nature of the soul to be active. But we have to get an answer to this question, what to do? What is an appropriate course of action? The impersonalist comes to the conclusion that nothing is worth doing. And this material energy keeps pushing us to do stuff, but actually none of it's worthwhile, and there's nothing higher. Therefore, let me simply try and stop, which is the goal of the meditator. They stop, they try and withdraw their senses, they try and subdue and ultimately dissolve the desires of the mind, the pushing of desire, and simply become inert. They try and do that. But it's a very difficult situation because the senses are pushing, the world is pushing, but also the spirit soul is pushing. Active, eternally active by nature, pleasure seeking. So that is the question, what to do. Now the intelligent person, they become very interested in the answer to the question, what does God want me to do? Or how can I please the Lord? Understanding that there must be a Supreme Lord. What does that Supreme Person want me to do? Arjuna asked the question, who is the Lord of sacrifice and how does he live in the body? He asked this in Bhagavad Gita. Very interesting question. Because it is actually it's an illusion to think that in devotional service you have to sacrifice and work hard, but if you just give it all up and do whatever you want in the material world, you don't have to sacrifice or serve. That's an illusion. Sometimes we forget that, things become, because we're performing Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti and we're doing it whether we want to or not, sometimes it becomes inconvenient to lead a life of discipline or sadhana. So we think, the mind immediately starts thinking, how can I get out of this? And I've been watching my mind when it does that. It starts thinking, well, first thing I need to do is create an alternative situation. Now, what is it going to be? What am I going to replace my current lifestyle with? And then the intelligence kicks in and you start thinking, and then you go, well, actually, what I should do is just get out of Maya, fix my mind on my transcendental purpose once again, and become enthused. That's actually what I should do. Because, anything else is, you can't justify it by reason, by logic, by principle. You can't justify it. Devotional service is the way. But the problem comes when you don't think that far. You say, well, sometimes devotional service is inconvenient and my faith is not complete and that's as far as you go. So you just run out into the world and try and do things. You have to think further. Okay, what's the alternative? And then, coming to the proper conclusion there, then you can fix your mind in devotional service. And the intelligent person fixes their mind on this point, this one point. What is the one point? And the one point of intelligence? That is, how can I please Krishna? And here Krishna is saying, I, the soul of all beings, am not as satisfied by ritual worship, brahminical initiations, penances, or self-discipline as I am by faithful service rendered to one's spiritual master. So there it is, right there. There's all these other things here we can do, which are pleasing to Krishna. Because he's not saying, I'm not satisfied by these things at all. He's saying, I'm not as satisfied. Otherwise, I'm satisfied, but I'll be more satisfied if you do this other thing. So, ritual worship, offering some respect and honor to the Lord. Brahminical initiation, cultivation of knowledge and goodness. Penances, self-discipline, all different paths. But I'm not as pleased by all that stuff as I am by faithful service rendered to one's spiritual master. Therefore, the lotus feet of our spiritual master are the only way by which you can obtain pure devotional service. Therefore, I bow down to his lotus feet with great awe and reverence. By his grace, one can cross the material ocean and obtain the mercy of Krishna. This is the conclusion of the Acharyas. Srila Prabhupada, when he was reading Bhagavad Gita, was struck, and this was really a major point in his life. We all have those points every now and then where something just becomes super clear to us. We have a realization, we have an insight, we have a eureka moment. So he had one of those moments, according to his own telling, when he was reading Vishva Chakravarti Thakur's commentary on Bhagavad Gita. And he read that verse. I don't know the Sanskrit. Does somebody know the Sanskrit? So the verse basically says that those with one point of intelligence, it's focused. They know what they're doing. They're fixed. But the intelligence of those who have no fixed determination is mini-branch. In other words, it's just whimsical. It's going here and there. All over the place. So, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, in his commentary, he says that what this means is that the disciple should fix their mind upon the order of the spiritual master as one's life and soul. Bust. Finish. That's all. Prabhupada read that and he got it, you know, he just made the decision. Yes, the order of my spiritual master is my life and soul. I have no other function of being. Simply to fulfill that order. And he became focused like a laser. You see, light can't cut anything. You know, these light bulbs can't cut anything. But you focus the light rays into a beam, a laser beam, and it becomes so powerful, you can burn through metal. That's the power of focus. So at one point we have to decide, you know, do I want to live a life of being pulled here and there by various desires, passing desires, desires arising from phases of the body, desires arising from association and circumstantial influences, desires arising from whim, and this way lead a splayed out life, which doesn't really amount to anything in the end, in the final analysis. As so many living creatures have done throughout the history of time. Do I want to do that? Or do I want to lead a significant life where I, with a focus, where I actually achieve something worthwhile, of eternal benefit for myself and for others? How can I add value, real value, significant value, transcendental value, lasting value to those who come in contact with me, with my writing, whatever. So we have to make that decision at some point. And we have to make it daily, actually. See, mission and purpose brings power. So, for the devotee, that mission and purpose is to fulfill the desire of the Lord, to please the Lord through the via medium of the spiritual master. Now, what is holding us back from this goal, from this purpose? It's our envy, and it's our selfish desire. So that is what the cleansing process of bhakti yoga is meant to remove. It's meant to remove the obstacles from our heart. The envy that says, why Krishna, or why Guru, or why the senior devotees? Why not me? Of course it should be me. But that doesn't work, because everybody's thinking that. There can only be one center. Multiple centers leads to all sorts of, that's the material world, it leads to clash, disharmony, discord. If you want if you want beautiful music, all the members of the orchestra must be playing the same tune. If everybody's just playing their own thing, like jazz music, it gets pretty messy. Jazz music, even that has some structure to it, of course, but just say you get an orchestra and everybody, you know, flips the bird at the conductor and just plays whatever they want, it's going to be raucous. So there has to be like a cosmic tune, a cosmic conductor, and that is the Supreme Lord. And the spiritual world is like that, because everybody plays in tune with the will of the Lord. But because we have our own desire to be distinct, independent of Krishna, then we find it very hard to actually surrender. And therefore we suffer a lot. So guru is an essential principle of spiritual life. By serving the guru, one serves Krishna. Without serving the guru, one cannot make any advancement. This is the prayer we sing every morning. Yasya prasade, Bhagavat prasade. Yasya prasade, nagati katopi. By the mercy of the spiritual master, one receives the benediction of Krishna. Without the mercy of the spiritual master, one cannot make any advancement. So that is the principle of guru. Now, Krishna is doing that. Krishna is showing that example. Just see, he's talking to Sudama Vipra, reminiscing about when they lived together in the ashram of their guru, Sandipani Muni. And he's relaying one particular story, where the wife of the guru said, please boys, Sudama and Krishna, go and get some sticks for the fire, some firewood. So they said, yes. Without question, they said yes. And they went into the vast forest to gather sticks and firewood. Then an unseasonable storm arose with great thunder, fierce wind and rain.
Yes.
And it became very terrifying. Very terrifying situation. They were trapped in the forest. The whole forest started flooding. So what did they do? As Sridhar Swami explains, they did not discard the sticks. They didn't go anywhere to hell with the order of our spiritual master's wife. Let us simply save our skins. They didn't think like that. No, they kept carrying the sticks with great determination, even though they were fearful. So this is what the sincere disciple does as well. Even when things get tough, things get hard, the mind is giving trouble, the material world is giving trouble, the disciple, sincere disciple, remains fixed. Where there is a will, there is a way. And that's true. That's absolutely true. If you're determined, nothing can stop you. You'll find a way. So it's just a matter of being determined, actually. It's just a matter of being fixed in your purpose. And you will find a way. So the devotee sees struggle as simply an opportunity to demonstrate his ultimate sincerity and determination. The disciple, the devotee, does not give up under any circumstances. He does not give up at all. It's not even an option. It's not even an option. He just goes on. And understanding that if Krishna gives me strength, then I can do it. If Krishna doesn't give me strength, and then it's Krishna's will, still I will try. So, Krishna is doing that with Sudama in the forest. And then the next day, the guru, Sandipani Muni, understanding the predicament of the two boys, set out after sunrise and found them. And Sandipani Muni was so touched by the determination to serve him. This is what he said: "Oh, my children, you have suffered so much for my sake. The body is most dear to every living creature, but you are so dedicated to me that you completely disregarded your own comfort." In other words, you subjugated the principle of comfort and selfish considerations for service to me, your guru. Which is ultimately service to Krishna. Because the thing is, the guru does not think, this is all meant for me. And I'm enjoying it. This indeed is the duty of the true disciples, to repay the debt to their spiritual master by offering him with pure hearts their wealth and even their very lives. So, naturally, we have a debt. We have a debt to Prabhupada. We have a debt to our spiritual masters. We have a debt to Krishna, actually. And that debt is actually unpayable. It's unpayable. You can't repay it. So everybody, actually, in the whole disciplic succession, is hopelessly in debt to Krishna. And then it goes up. You know, we're in debt to our spiritual master. Our spiritual master is in debt to his spiritual master. Can't pay it back. It's just too much. How can you pay back somebody who has saved you from the material world out of causeless mercy? Because it wasn't anything you did. It wasn't because of that cool haircut that you got saved. It wasn't because of your A in science at school. It wasn't anything you did in the material energy that allowed us to get the mercy of Krishna. No, it was simply the mercy of the preacher, who is simply serving the source of their mercy, their guru. And it goes back like that. So there is no debt, there's no way we can pay that back, that debt. But there is a way. And that is to simply surrender one's life to the order of the spiritual master. And try and fulfill the mission of the spiritual master, which isn't actually his own mission. It's Krishna's mission, ultimately. And the commentator here, disciples of Srila Prabhupada, says, "The spiritual master does not exploit the disciple, but rather engages him fully in Krishna consciousness for the disciple's eternal benefit." Now that's an important point. The spiritual master is a via medium. You see videos of Srila Prabhupada actually sitting on the Vyasa Sun and they're doing Guru Puja, because in the olden days, when Prabhupada was still around, that wouldn't be a Murti of Prabhupada, that would be Prabhupada sitting right there. And you'd be singing, if you were leading Guru Puja, you'd be singing directly to Prabhupada. It's still that way, but we might think otherwise. But Prabhupada would be sitting there. And you hear kirtans. And the disciples were so choked up, actually, with emotion. You know, Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami. And they're just like, you can see them struggling just to get the words out. Because Prabhupada's right there. Prabhupada was right there, because you know that, because Prabhupada starts singing later. And such feeling. But you see videos of Prabhupada sitting there and everybody's offering flowers and dancing in front of him. He's sitting there completely without pretense. It's quite amazing to see, actually. He's just completely unfazed by the whole thing. You can see he's not getting puffed up by all the worship. No, he's simply being perfect via medium. He's accepting the disciples' reverence and love on behalf of Krishna, and then giving it 100% to Krishna. He's not keeping any for himself. So that is Guru. Guru has to be like that, otherwise that's not Guru. How can your... If the Guru is taking a cut for his own ego, then he's not Guru. And how is your service going to go to Krishna? It's not. So therefore Guru means one who is a perfect via medium. That's important. As Rupa Goswami says in Nectar of Instruction, the Guru is one who's conquered the urges of the senses, the urges of the mind, the tongue, belly and genitals, the actions of anger. He's conquered all these things. In other words, he's conquered all his own appetites. He's realized that actually my function is eternal servant of the Lord. Realized that, understood that, practically. And therefore, why would he try and use anything in service of his own false ego? He wouldn't. Of course not. If he's really realized. Therefore he gives it all to Krishna and becomes via medium. And that's how the principle of Guru works. I was thinking about this morning, you know, that we are not the controller, we are not the enjoyer. And this principle of we are not the enjoyer, is it just like a way of saying that I know you want to enjoy and you like to enjoy, but you're not allowed to. Is that what that's saying? You're just not allowed to. And there was one devotee, you know, from Wellington, he counsels a lot of people. And he was saying, these people come to me with such a multitude of problems and complexities. And after talking to them, I've noticed a trend. In fact, the trend is universal. It all comes down to one thing. Why won't Krishna let me enjoy? That's the source of all their problems and anxieties and complexities and doubts and everything. I want to enjoy and Krishna won't let me. But actually that's not really the right way of looking at it. What it means that the self is an eternal servant of the Lord, which means that's the natural thing. I don't know how many of us have actually contemplated when we try and enjoy things. You know, you've got a ice cream or something like that. You know, and you put it in your mouth and it's dissolving in your mouth and the taste buds are tingling and, you know, all the nerve impulses are going to the brain. And you know, and your consciousness, what you're trying to do is get with your consciousness and just grab that sensation and wrap around it and try and like make it yours, you know. You try and do that with anything, you know. Whether it's some worship, some praise, or some sense object, some idea, some movie, some romantic concept, whatever. You just try and get it, you just try and enjoy it. But the more you try, the more you get frustrated, because somehow you just can't possess it. You just can't soak it up and make it eternally yours. It just kind of happens and then goes and it's gone. And then you're like, oh man, and you got to find something else. That's what it means. We're not actually enjoying it. It's not actually... By trying to do that, by that practice of trying to wrap your consciousness around things you perceive as enjoyable and try and enjoy them, you'll be frustrated. It won't work. You won't be able to possess them as objects of enjoyment. It's not your actual position. Does that mean, ha, now you will never have any satisfaction and happiness? Because Krishna's a sadist. Ha, have eternal consciousness. Have desire for happiness and fulfillment, but it's never going to be fulfilled. No, Krishna's not like that. But the process is, the mechanism is, that with your will, with your desire, with your senses, you simply get engaged in the service of the Lord, and your whole desire is, may the Lord be pleased with my offering. May the Lord be pleased with my very existence. And if you're right on that level, it doesn't even matter so much what you're doing. Because, you know, the body and mind aren't ultimately under our control anyway. We don't even own them. It's just the energy of the Lord. So if we're right on that level, you find you become happy. You become satisfied. Yourself is nourished. Even without thinking of yourself, yourself is nourished. You feel, wow, I'm peaceful. And sometimes it's a bit scary because all your other desires and things go away. And you think, hang on, I don't actually need all the stuff that I've been meditating on. All I need to do is become fixed in devotional consciousness. That's all I need to do. If I do that, you know, and just don't worry about anything else, in other words, as Krishna says, Master Jaha, don't worry, do not fear, just surrender unto me, do not fear. If I just do that, then I won't have to worry about anything else. We're so accustomed to worrying that we can't do that. But then you become nourished, you become satisfied, just like the hand automatically becomes nourished if it feeds the mouth. So simply by desiring the pleasure of the Lord, and then, you know, because desire is the causal body. Desire is the causal level of being. Everything else is caused from desire. It goes through the, intelligence, mind, and then the senses. It's all caused by desire. Depending on what we desire, intelligence formulates strategies how to achieve it. So desire is the causal level. So if we get it right on the desire level, our desire that Krishna is happy, is pleased with me, basically. I desire to be worthy. Then everything else happens, you know, naturally action happens, devotional service happens. The senses are active in the service of the Lord. And we become so happy. We become nourished. And we still, you know, it's not that the devotional life is essentially empty. Automatically, the prasadam of the Lord is there in the form of incense, in the form of flower garlands, in the form of prasadam, food itself. Music is there, dance is there, everything is there. But the devotee isn't actually like trying to wrap his consciousness or her consciousness around these different prasadam items and just enjoy them. No, the prasadam is honored in a devotional consciousness as well. But still, the happiness is there. If you're just satisfied with prasadam or the mercy of the Lord, whatever comes, then you'll be satisfied. And so the practical example we see Krishna showing the practical example of how to be a disciple, filling that role very nicely, and the disciple and the spiritual master being so pleased. And then getting the blessing of the spiritual master. Krishna gets the blessing of the spiritual master. What is that blessing? May the Vedas remain ever fresh in your mind. May you always remain inspired in spiritual consciousness. What a benediction. Because we all remember times when we were inspired in spiritual life. You feel so inspired, and it's a deep inspiration. And then there's other times when we're not so inspired, generally because we're in Maya. Of some description. In fact, guaranteed, because there's another reason. So, the spiritual master's benediction, may you remain always inspired. May genuine spiritual knowledge remain ever fresh in your mind. Juicy and succulent. The consciousness. May it remain fresh in your mind. That is the highest benediction. In other words, may you always remain in genuine Krishna consciousness. And also Sandipani Muni gives the benediction to Krishna, that may, whatever you speak, may that also remain eternally fresh. So of course Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita and it remained eternally fresh. It remains eternally fresh. So also the one in perfect consciousness, whatever they say is real. Krishna is speaking through them. They simply become an instrument. And Prabhupada is also a very fine example of a disciple. And such determination, you see, unbreakable determination. And think that determination is such wonderful things, amazing things. And he continues to inspire people way after he's gone. Yeah. After he's left that, his manifest presence, the presence has been withdrawn from our vision. Still inspires everyone. A lot of people, the reason they remain fixed in Krishna consciousness is simply by meditating on Prabhupada's example. Even though I'm struggling so much, if I simply meditate on Prabhupada's example, Prabhupada's character, it gives me such faith. And how could I ever leave his lotus feet? This is what his disciples, that's how they meditate. Unbreakable determination. Where there is a will, there is a way. So, I think we'll stop there. Any questions or comments on these points? Yes.
You were saying how we have determination to take a wonderful thing. What if our determination is not that high? How do we increase it so that, you know, we can do wonderful things?
That's a good question. Your determination is not high. How do you make it high?
Exactly.
Yeah. Basically, determination arises from faith. Whatever you have faith in, you'll be determined about. In other words, whatever you think is real, you'll have faith in. And whatever you have faith in, you'll be determined about. So we have faith, we have blind faith actually, in the idea that my desires will be fulfilled in this world. We have faith in it. We have faith. Material happiness is possible. It's a myth. It's a complete myth. An analysis of the history of time will prove that. So, and then we also don't have so much faith that, you know, pleasing Krishna is the source of our existence. Or we might even have faith, but we're just so distracted by these other things. By other things, by Maya, by other desires. So we have to develop faith and knowledge through the practice of Krishna consciousness, especially through chanting. Chanting attentive japa will increase our faith a lot. Prabhupada was asked on two occasions, you know, how to become an empowered book distributor. On both occasions, even though there are many years apart, he said, chant all your rounds from beginning to end without interruption in a focused way. And that has a big effect, actually, on the consciousness. It cleans out a lot of stuff and gives you some direct perception of Krishna. So we have to cultivate knowledge and we have to cultivate attraction to the holy name, focus on the holy name. If you can focus on the holy name, then you'll be determined. It's kind of like chanting is kind of like a metaphor actually for our whole life. If you can if you can actually bring the mind, withdraw it out of all the other things, and get it to focus on the holy name for that practice time during the day, then the practice will eventually pervade your whole life. At any time you can, you begin to get focused, it becomes the habit to be focused on the holy name, on Krishna's pleasure. And other than that, there's just the process of purification, following the process, and doing that under guidance. The Guru will see our needs, what is it distracting us, and help us overcome those distractions. Maybe through progressive guidance over the years, by putting us in the right situation for us. Putting us in the right ashram, giving us the right service. That is the benediction of the spiritual master. That he guide us to that point of unalloyed devotion. We just have to follow, have a bit of faith that we can get there.
Just another aspect, a big part is also this duty consciousness. So even if you don't have the faith and if you don't have so much determination, but if you just stick to notes of the spiritual master and just try to do your duty and serve in that way, then do you think you can be real to us?
Yeah, that's true. That's Bodhisattva Bhakti. Whether you feel like it or not, you do it. But the real power comes when you do feel like it. When you have faith, this is what I should be doing. When to get to that point, you've got to do the vaidhi, you've got to do the duty. And then eventually you realize, hang on, this is it. Now let me do it. Now let me give up all my resistance, my mental resistance. And do it with full conviction. Contra Srimad Bhagavatam ki.